Well, that's true. There really is so much left to know, and that's why I'm on the road to find out. My name's Steve Gregg, and I'm on the road to find out at least every Sunday night at this hour. And actually, I'm kind of on the road to find out 24/7 all the time. But this program, by that name, is for those who feel that they're either on the road to find out or else they have already found out, and they want to help those of us who are still on the road. To find out what? Well, I guess there's always stuff to find out, but this program's mainly concerned with finding out the large issues of life. And I'm not a young man. I'm 57 years old. I'll be 58 in a couple months. And I have been on this road to find out for all my adult life. Now, you don't live that long and do exploration as I have done without reaching some conclusions, but there's still many things, as Cat Stevens said, there's so much left to know. And frankly, even the conclusions I've reached, I'm willing to hear challenges to, because as far as I'm concerned, my interest is not in defending my present views per se, but in really just knowing the truth. Now, obviously, I do have present views, and I'll let you know what those are in case you're a new listener. But even though I have present views, maybe I think more than most people I know, I'm still interested in seeing those views challenged. I'm still interested in seeing if somebody has a better, a better reason for me to believe something else. I don't think they will, because in the time I've spent exploring my own views, I'm reasonably sure, but I'm still seeking to be open-minded. And I don't know about the rest of you out there, but some of you may be open-minded too. Some of you may have reached tentative views. Maybe you've got very strong views about the issues that we're interested in here. The issues we're interested in are those that relate to one's worldview. One might call worldview religion, though not all worldviews are religious. Of course, a worldview deals with questions that religions deal with also, like where did everything come from? Where is it all going? What is our destiny? Are there ethics and values that we should be concerned about? Is there a purpose for our being here? If there is, wouldn't it be a nice thing to know that? It seems to me that we are much more significant than animals. And that significance certainly must translate into some kind of a purpose for existence. And yet the average person has no idea what the purpose of existence is, beyond, for example, the purpose that animals have for existence, which is to eat, to survive, to reproduce, and then to die. And really, that's what all people do that, just like all animals do. But many of us feel that human beings are really very much more significant than that. Many people believe that humans have souls. Some believe that humans are immortal, and that after we die, there's something else after this. Many of us believe there's a God out there. And there's different kinds of descriptions of what kind of a God different people think is out there. So this is what we're looking at. Now, my own views are those that conform with the basic Christian views. I say basic Christian because I don't conform to any particular denomination of Christianity, and I don't belong to any religious system. I'm just a thinking person who's looking for, I want my life to be conformed to what is true. And in my own exploration, I have concluded that, at least for the time being, unless someone can show me otherwise, that the Christian views, that the Bible is a reliable guide, that it really is what it claims to be. And I don't hold this as a sort of a blind faith kind of position. I hold it as a result of really looking at that evidence critically. I believe that the Bible, everything it claims to be, it is. And I believe that the stories of Jesus that are told there are true. And because I believe they are true, I believe that Jesus lived a miraculous life. I believe that he died and rose again and is alive since then. And I believe that he made certain astounding claims about himself, which I think are true. Now, those are the things I believe, but I'm certainly willing to have those things challenged. In fact, I prefer on this program to hear primarily from people who do want to challenge that, people who don't hold the same views as I do and would like to discuss that. If you've got challenges to the credibility of the Bible or of Christian beliefs, feel free to call me. We can talk about that. If you have another belief system you think holds more water, I'd like to hear your system. You might be an atheist. I'd like to hear from you if that's what you think is true. You might be a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Jew or something else. It's those who are not Christians I'd like to hear from tonight and these Sunday nights. Because I would qualify as a Christian because I believe in Jesus, and therefore I'm looking to talk with people who are of another viewpoint. Now, for any Christians who may be listening, I have a daily radio show on other radio stations, not this one. And that is basically directed toward Christian people. It's a talk show also. And you can get information about that from my website, which is thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. And you can hear that show and call in there if you want to. But this show is called The Road to Find Out. And it's not for Christians. It's for people who aren't Christians who'd like to talk to me about your reactions to Christianity, your thoughts about it, maybe questions you have about it, and maybe strong objections, too. The number to call if you'd like to be on the air with me is 479-1080. That's 479-1080. And you can get on pretty quickly, probably, if you call, we hope. Our first caller is one we haven't heard from for a long time, and that is Liberty in Santa Cruz. Liberty used to call me back when I was on the air back last year, but I haven't heard from you, Liberty, for a while, have I?
Yes, good evening.
Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear you back on the air.
Yeah, I've been back since the beginning of January.
Yeah, I just haven't really had a chance to call in because, you know, life happens. Sometimes I'm doing other things on a evening when you're on. But I wanted to share with you my experience with going back to church.
What kind of church are we talking about?
Well, it's kind of a New Age church. I have a couple of clients. I'm a wood floor contractor, and nobody has actually invited me to their church before. And these people did. They were very kind. They knew that I was going through, that I had some issues, and they invited me to their church, and I took them up on it. 8 months ago, I had cancer surgery. I had my bladder and my prostate removed due to a cancerous tumor growing on my bladder. It was a rather life-changing event.
It sounds alarming, yeah.
And I thought I was done with it, and I had a follow-up PET scan, and there were some spots, questionable spots that showed up on my lungs, and it required a biopsy to determine whether they were cancer or not, and this was alarming. So I went to church. The last time I went to church was when my mother died, and I went down to Lubbock, Texas, and went to a Primity Baptist I'm searching for the word. It was a memorial for my mother at her church that she went to.
Okay.
In Lubbock, Texas. Primity Baptist, I mean, this is about as fundamentalist as you can get.
Yeah.
They don't play musical instruments. Their music is a cappella and is very, very old school. The church in the wild woods.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the church you went back to more recently.
Well, the church that I went to turns out was established back in the 70s down in Malibu. And it was sort of a New Age. They were trying to draw in the surfers and the hippies.
Uh-huh.
And which is cool. I mean, you know, I have no problem with that. But the service that I attended was in a building in Scotts Valley that had been formerly occupied by a high-tech company. And there was this big meeting room that had a screen, and they had a projection. They had projection equipment and everything. They had a rock band.
You know, actually, if you go to some of the larger churches of almost any denomination these days, you'll find all that is there. You'll find that a lot of churches have a rock band up front, and they almost, if they're a large church at all, they usually have big projection screens and so forth. I don't actually attend any one church regularly. And, I, you know, it's interesting that you say that no one had ever invited you to church before. Well, if I had a church, I'd invite you, but I don't.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do actually hold meetings occasionally in a home on Thursday nights in the Santa Cruz area when I'm not traveling. I've been out of town the last 2 weeks, but like this Thursday, there's a meeting, and you can get information about that. I'd love to have you, love to meet you or any of our listeners out there.
Well, the thing is, they had this rock band. They had the lyrics of the songs projected on a screen, and they were totally things that I had absolutely no connection with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was actually thinking while this was going on, I was thinking, wow, you know, I'd really like to go to a black Pentecostal church where they sang the old stuff. I was reminded of a movie called Keeping the Faith. Do you remember that? Did you see it?
I don't remember.
Well, Keeping the Faith was about a young Jewish boy and a young Catholic boy that grew up together. And the Jewish boy grew up and became a rabbi. The Catholic boy grew up and became a Catholic priest. And they maintain their friendship. And at some point, the Jewish rabbi decided he needed to do something to stimulate his congregation. So he invited a black Pentecostal choir to come in and sing some of the Jewish songs.
Interesting.
And it really kind of... you know, at first, his Jewish congregation didn't know what to make of it, but eventually, you know, they said, hey, this is really cool, you know, this is really spirited.
Now, Liberty, haven't if I'm not mistaken, haven't you told me your wife and daughter are Jewish?
Yes.
All right, so do they go to a synagogue?
Yes.
Now, why
they
don't...
are Reformed Jews.
Do you ever go to synagogue with them?
Yes. And I practiced Passover and Hanukkah.
So why were you interested in going to a church at this time? I know you mentioned you had cancer, but I mean, is there any reason that you don't feel like connecting to the synagogue more?
Well, my wife and I, you know, we've been married for 25 years. We lived together for 10 years before that. So for all intents and purposes, I've been married for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, when we first connected, when we first started living together, when we got married, I didn't think that it was a big deal. But over the years, you know, I realized that part of my heritage, part of my culture was celebrating Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't allowed, in quotes, to have a Christmas tree in the house because my wife and my daughter were Jewish. And, you know, over a period of time, it did kind of become an issue because, you know, whether... I am a born-again Christian or not, which I'm not, because I'm kind of one of those people that feels like that religion is the politics of spirituality. And I'm not really into being religious, but I am into being spiritual. And but over a period of time, I felt like, you know, this is something that's really missing from my life, is a connection with my past. Mm. And my past is Christian.
Your mother, I take it, was Baptist, since her memorial was in a Baptist church?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to have to take another call here, but tell me, you know, let's cut to the chase. What's the bottom line as far as your takeaway from your visit to this New Agey kind of church in Scotts Valley?
Well, I had a member pray for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going in to have my biopsy in a matter of days. And as it turned out, my biopsy, they ran me through the CAT scan machine, and it turned out that the spots on my lungs had disappeared.
Well, do you think that's an answer to prayer?
Possibly. Could have had something to do with it. But, you know, it's also, somebody explained to me that the PET scan is very sensitive and it will pick up any abnormality, and I also have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and I was having a flare-up of bronchitis at the time, so what was probably picked up was inflammations in my lungs.
Well,
from
now,
bronchitis.
If your health crisis seems to be less severe, will you continue going to church, or do you feel like you were just drawn back there because you're beginning to feel mortal?
Well, everybody that I met was really, really kind, really loving, but just the format of the church didn't really turn me on.
Yeah,
I'm thinking that I would like to check out different churches. And I'm really thinking, you know, you know, the Pentecostals, they're Bible thumping, but they are really, you know, they really have the spirit. And I just didn't feel the spirit from the New Age music that I was hearing.
Now, when you said New Age, you just mean modern?
Well, you know, it was
the reason I ask is I know of a church in Scotts Valley that fits the description that you gave, except I wouldn't call it New Age. I always think of New Age as having to do with the specifics of their beliefs, whereas it sounds like maybe you're thinking of it simply as, you know, modern style of music and you know, not very traditional churchy stuff. Is that how you're using that term?
Yeah.
Okay.
Much.
Yeah. Well, this is.
Yeah.
Okay. You probably went. I won't ask the name of it. You probably went to a church I've been to before myself, and. Yeah, I think that's a reasonably good church, but it may not suit everyone's tastes. I mean, you may want something a little more traditional. But I think I probably have been to that church you're talking about. And I wouldn't call it New Age, because I think of the New Age. New Age is borrows a great deal from Eastern religion and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which if this is the group I'm thinking of, I don't think they do. Anyway, you know, I'm really glad to hear that. I've got to move on and take another call. But,
yes.
But I'm glad to hear that your spots have cleared up, and whether it was really cancer or not, it's good to have you, you know, in good health again. And continue your search. Continue, and let me know if you come up with anything. Now, if you'd ever like to visit my meeting, I don't do it every Thursday night because I travel out of town a lot. But whenever I'm in town, we hold a Thursday night meeting in Aptos, and you can get information about that. I won't give it over the air here, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's open to anybody who wants to come, and it's kind of an open discussion. It's not really a church service at all, because it's not a church. It's more of a discussion about spiritual things and biblical things and so forth. And, but you can get information at thenarrowpath.com at the announcements link. It'll tell you where that is.
Thenarrowpath.com.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, well, Liberty, good talking to you again. Thanks for calling me again.
You bet.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, you're listening to The Road to Find Out, and my name is Steve Gregg, and if you're not familiar with the program, I'm inviting people who are not of the same belief system as myself. Now, my belief system is Christian. I believe in the Bible. I believe in Jesus Christ. But I'm inviting people who have other belief systems to call and to discuss, especially why they would differ from that, because I'd like to have dialogue. Not an argument, just dialogue, and it's always invigorating to me. I'm always trying to keep an open mind myself, and I think a lot of the people who call here sound like they have kind of open minds as well. The number to call is 479-1080. That's 479-1080. Michael from Santa Cruz, frequent caller and friend of the program. Hi, how you doing?
How you doing, Steve? Nice to hear you.
Ah, it's a different Michael. So I was thinking of a different Michael who's a frequent caller. Good to hear from you.
Okay. I did talk to you one time last year, sometime. I can't remember exactly. But you know, in reference to what you were talking, you know, I like to, since your last caller, talk about sharing, but this is not so much a personal life thing, more, but I guess it does influence your life, obviously. But, I discovered something that is really dramatic, and you mentioned, you know, belief system and so on and so forth. I tend to believe, you know, that what Jesus said was very powerful. But in my way of seeing it now, I realize that it's a lot deeper than just the religion, you know. So it's more like basically life calling, you know. And but I discovered something that it really amazes me, and this is where the internet is so awesome in many ways. I was by some really strange circumstances. A few years ago, I was introduced to Christian Science, and I was really called on understanding that model of thinking, and it was very alien to me to see that. But after a few years, I did not participate anymore, and about 2 years ago, I discovered, by accident, if you want to call it, about a Dr. Quimby. You know,
mm-hmm.
That,
yeah, kind of the background of Christian Science, yeah.
And this man, it is just an awesome discovery, because this man, basically, he was the inspiration behind, and what happened afterwards, it's really dramatic and sad, because this lady basically took all his teachings and
he was the one that came up with the ideas that Mary Baker Eddy popularized. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Scientology and all of the mm-hmm. others sprang out of that. And maybe that's what they call sometimes, you know, the new age or something. But anyway, I tell you, back to Dr. Quimby and his understanding, you know, of wisdom and life and Christ and so on and so forth. And concerning that man who called earlier, you know, about the fact that he basically realized his life was very short. It could have been, anyway. And then all of a sudden he reaches into a church, you know, as a way of saying, well, maybe my time is limited. I better get closer to God or something. And it's interesting how we see life and God or church, whatever, you know, is in those circumstances. But unfortunately, that's worked that way. And but that's okay. It doesn't matter, you know, which way you come close to God, I guess it's okay. But the principle that Jesus taught, it is so radically different from church to church to church as to what this man saw and practiced, which he healed, you know, thousands of people. And it just puzzled to me, you know. And so I'm really interested in see if you can bring some out of that, because
Quimby believed, didn't he, that Jesus simply understood the laws, sort of like scientific laws, that would lead to healing and a good life, didn't he? I mean, that Jesus, I mean, I know Christian Science, they call it the Church of Christ Scientist, and they say that Christ was a scientist who knew these laws. just like a regular scientist knows the laws of nature, that Christ knew these laws, I guess, of the spiritual realm or something that could get people healed and stuff. Is that what he taught?
Not really, but...
What did he teach? Tell me what he did teach so I can understand it.
Yeah, it sounds like that, because what Mary Baker did, it was actually, you know, I mean, you can look it in the internet. She copied basically all of the basic tenets, basic teachings that this guy had. And so the idea of the word science, you know, is quite different than the word belief, you know. And the word science, like any understanding of the real word science, means to prove something, you know, to prove the truth.
Well, the word science means knowledge. It's the Greek word for knowledge.
Well, knowledge will not apply to Quimby at all, because he discloses the idea of knowledge as man-made understanding, you know, which is based on error, like Jesus said, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got other calls waiting, but I do want to hear, could you give me the essence of the difference between what you're talking about and what you say other churches teach?
Okay, the essence is that the death, you know, that can be seen by the works, because talky-talky-talky is really easy. I mean, we can all have talky-talky in philosophies and so on. But the practical ways that Jesus, you know, proved, you know, with works, healing the sick, raising the dead, on and on, you know, proving the fact of life, and that was my point.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the distinctive is from the, I mean, for example, I think most Christians would say that Jesus proved, you know, that he was telling the truth by his miracles. But I mean, I don't quite understand what the difference is that you're talking about. I mean, I have heard, you know, some things about Christian Science which do sound different from normal Christianity, but I'm not sure what differences you're bringing out here.
Well, the practicality of the transformation, like this man's life, mm-hmm. you know, dependent on doctors instead of God, for instance, you know, and the reason why we practice, you know, relying on doctors is because we don't follow the tenets that Jesus said, you know, basically we don't trust God enough. We trust more men than we trust God.
I see. Yeah, well, I mean, there are people who are Christians and not Christian scientists who also, you know, try to trust God for their healing and for their health, and not doctors. I don't know that Jesus was entirely against the use of doctors, because Jesus said, those who are well do not need a physician, but those who are sick do.
Exactly.
And so Jesus believed that there were people who were sick and who do need a physician. And so he never said anything negatively about physicians in general. That was just an illustration he was making, because he said, and likewise, he had come not to reach righteous people, but to call sinners to repentance. So he was saying that people who are sinners are sort of in the analogous to people who are sick, and that he calling them to repentance was analogous to a doctor going to a sick person to make them well. So it was just an analogy, but it's interesting in making that analogy. He was saying that doctors are needed by sick people. But you're saying that what if a person had enough of the right kind of faith or knowledge, what they would not ever need a doctor, they'd be able to be well without that?
Well, it all stems from Genesis, you know, and Genesis explains clearly, you know, what happened, you know, and unfortunately, you know, some of the symbols are lost, and obviously, yeah.
All
but
right.
It's a long conversation about that, but I was just referring to the fact, you know, that it's interesting that the man called before me and that he had a situation that his life was in danger with the name of a disease, and I was just earlier trying to call you about the fact that about this man that I discovered is kind of cool. How he interpreted and it's fascinating, and hopefully, you know, the entire world turns into seeing it like that. Unless it is, you know, obviously it doesn't work.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay, good talking to you. You're listening to The Road to Find Out. If you'd like to be on the program tonight, we're live from 7 to 8, and you can call me at 479-1080. If you're outside the Santa Cruz area, that's area code 831-479-1080. And we can talk to you, too. Now, this next caller is the Michael that I thought the last Michael was when I put him on the air. This is a frequent caller, Michael. Hi.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good.
Good evening. So anyway, this morning, I don't know, have you ever listened to God Talk on KGO?
I used to listen to it when Bernie was on. I found him very annoying, to tell you the truth, but I haven't heard it since he's been... Or is he in jail or something?
Yeah, they have a new guy, Brent something. I forget his name. He seems to be a real Bible scholar. And anyway, he had on a... It was a this morning he played a recording of a debate that he orchestrated with this Christopher... This atheist guy?
Christopher Hitchens?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this Indian guy who is a Christian. I forget his...
Oh, is it Dinesh D'Souza, perhaps?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. And I think it took place within the past couple of weeks at some place in San Jose.
I didn't know that. I would have loved to hear it. Yeah, Christopher Hitchens is one of the big selling, as they call it, new atheists authors.
Yeah, British guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And Dinesh D'Souza is an Indian, a man from India who's a Christian speaker. And he has debated a lot of those guys. In fact, I think he's debated Christopher Hitchens more than once.
Yeah, you would have appreciated this. I wish I could have recorded it, but I was in and out of sleep, but I caught maybe two-thirds of it.
Yeah, so what, they played the debate on the air on God Talk?
Yeah, rather than doing his usual format where he takes questions and discourses on different topics, he decided to just... rebroadcast this replay this recording of the debate, which it sounded like it was within the past week or so.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I so much of what how do you say the Christopher Hitchens?
Hitchens, yeah.
Hitchens, mm-hmm. Yeah. So much of what Christopher Hitchens had to say, I just see it. I can't help but agree with it. I mean, he covered a lot of territory. In fact, the host didn't get to play the entire debate because mm-hmm. There wasn't time. But you know, one of the things that he mentioned, because so from the traditional paradigm, Judeo-Christian paradigm, God created everything. God created all human beings, and then you know, people are endowed with free will.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in a certain direction, according to the biblical account. Adam and Eve were told not to eat the forbidden fruit, and they went ahead and did it anyway. So they were banished from the garden, and then all human beings carry the stain that they carry in their DNA or whatever, the impulse or the nature, the fallen nature. And I mean, you know. Whatever a human being is, you know, with a capacity for doing good, for doing negative action, that's the nature of the beast. And he was saying that God creates everybody and then is demanding that they follow his will, and if not, they will be punished eternally. And then what's more, you know, all these people who had nothing to do with that particular choice in the Garden of Eden, they're being punished. I personally wasn't there. I had nothing to do with that. And everybody else who's around since then.
Well, Michael, you're a Buddhist. So if you suffer today... what are you suffering for? You weren't there with Adam and Eve, but I mean, what has brought your suffering on you in this life?
It's the nature of being alive. That's the first noble truth of the Buddha. The truth.
Okay,
I
can accept that. I can accept it's the nature of being alive. But why is that part of the nature of being alive? I think the Christian doctrine is that the nature of being alive, that is the nature of reality, is that there is sickness and there's pain and there's death and so forth.
Yes.
Because there is alienation from God, and that is sin. Now, also, of course, a great deal of human suffering is caused because of the sinful choices that individuals make, whether it's a direct criminal assault or whether it's rich people, you know, taking advantage of poor people or corrupt governments, you know, oppressing and tyrannizing innocent people. Obviously, there's a lot of sin that causes suffering. Now, In your religious system, where did sin come from, and why is sin there?
Right. It's not that, according to the basic, you know, general Buddhist teaching, it's not that people the human mind is innately or inherently sinful. Rather, because of a fundamental error in perception, people are living from the egocentric perspective. Basically, everybody instinctively conceives of their life as oneself against the rest of the universe. Everybody is on guard, and
that would certainly lead to sinful behavior. That's true.
Yeah. It's just a
but why is this misperception so universal? Why would we think that way if it's not true? What is it that makes everybody see things that way?
The origin of it, there may be explanations for it. I've never gotten a definitive explanation as to why the primordial ignorance arises. But it's one of the things that I've heard is that it had no beginning, whatever that means. But it is said that it can end, that the illusion of being an ultimately independent being, being a separate wave on the ocean, that illusion can be transcended. And when it is, then one intuitively understands one's existence as inseparable from the totality, and hence there's no fear.
I would have some, I guess, maybe a philosophical problem believing that something that had no beginning could possibly have an end. Because now I'd have an easier time believing that something that had a beginning could someday have no end. For example, in the Christian doctrine, we each had a beginning. We all came into existence at a certain time, but we can receive from our Creator eternal life. Now, in the Christian doctrine, only the Creator never had a beginning. And because it is His nature to exist, of course, He can never come to an end either. It's like the nature of reality that He exists, and that's the only explanation that can be given for why He would have no beginning. Everything, it has a beginning.
It gets into what they call the chain of dependent origination, which is a vast sort of core level topic. But basically, it's cyclical. So in a nutshell, because one has a body, One has senses, eyes which see and ears which can hear and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, there's contact with the outside world, with a visual and auditory impressions. And because of that, certain habits of mind develop of grasping onto things which are pleasant, having aversion toward things that are unpleasant. And this activity generates a sense of self in the deep layers of the individual consciousness.
So in other words, I mean, that sounds sensible. That sounds reasonable. That a person who's born clueless, let us say, about anything, might immediately find that some things please the senses and some things do not, and will learn habits of seeking those things that please the senses, and eventually, as it were, become addicted to that which is pleasant to oneself and placing oneself above others and so forth.
I mean, basically the loss of innocence. But the thing is, it's more complicated than that, because according to the Hindu-Buddhist view, the individual lifetime is only the tip of the iceberg. So beings are being reborn with tendencies from countless past lives. Like somebody might have been a thief, mm-hmm, in a previous lifetime and have a proclivity towards stealing.
I understand. And that, again, that has a sensible sound to it to me. I guess I'd wonder, and what is there to convince you or me that this is the right way of understanding things? I mean, if you ask me, why, Steve, are you convinced of the biblical view? There's a great number of evidences that I could marshal, and would be glad to do so if anyone asked, Which make me think, okay, of the smorgasbord of belief systems out there, this one seems to have the evidence in its favor. But obviously you're convinced of a different belief system, the Buddhist, more. And so I'm curious, what is the evidence that makes you convinced that that is the right system?
Well, yeah, no, we won't have enough time as usual, but there's so many angles to come at that from. I mean, number one, Christopher Hitchens was saying, the guy was really animated. I mean, you've heard him?
Yes, I've heard him. He's very animated. He's very caustic. He's very witty. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was saying, you know, I like Popeye, I am what I am, and I don't want some God telling me how I have to be.
Well, that's exactly why he's an atheist. See, he's not an atheist because there's strong intellectual reasons to be an atheist. He's an atheist because he doesn't want some God telling him what he wants to be, as he said. I mean, that is that was a moment of honesty coming from Christopher Hitchens. I think most atheists, if they are honest, will say that very thing. The reason I'm an atheist is I don't want there to be a God. Not because there's evidence that there's no God. After all, what evidence is there that there's no God? You said you resonated with what he said. And what he said was, you know, God created people and then he expects them to obey him. And if they don't, he punishes them forever. Well, okay, all of that sounds maybe distasteful. But is there anything about that that's intrinsically not possibly true? I mean, what if that is true, but distasteful? What would I want to do with that information? How would I test it?
Okay. The whole, and this is what occurred to me when I was in Hebrew school. The whole notion of a cosmic, I don't know, judge or policeman or ultimate, like, you know, head man, Mr. Big of the universe is watching everybody and who's imposing an external will. See, in Buddhism, the notion of sin or of negative karmic activity is very close. If you read biblical chapters, and if you read like the Dhammapada, mm-hmm. it follows along a similar line. But the activity, the way it's understood in the East, it's not that somebody is judging me, rather the action carries its own, the seed of its own consequence.
Well, yeah, I can understand that way of thinking. I mean, both karma and the biblical idea of a judge, a final judgment, both of them are trying to give alternative explanations to a conundrum that we all face in life, and that is that justice is not always done in this lifetime. Some people live very exemplary and selfless lives and seem to be poor and sick and miserable and die in pain. Other people seem to be evil, exploitative kind of tyrants, and yet they live comfortably and live healthily and die peaceably in their sleep. And so we see, well, that's not just. So different religions definitely give different answers to, you know, what the explanation of that is. Now, of course, the atheist will simply say, well, there's no justice just because there isn't, you know, deal with it. The Christian faith and some others will say, well, no, there is a God who will bring retribution in the end. There will be a final judgment, and no one gets away with it forever. And then, of course, the religions of the East that talk about karma say, well, karma catches up with you and, you know, brings retribution in the sense that, you know, you don't get away with your actions. Now, here's what I want to know. Why does it seem necessarily or intrinsically more likely that an impersonal, unthinking principle like karma would be so devoted to righting the wrongs and settling the scores, and not that there would be a personal being who has a mind, maybe a mind analogous to our own, only much superior, that has a concern about those things and has that interest in settling the scores? I mean, obviously both karma and the God of the theistic religions are interested in settling the score. It's just that karma doesn't have any personality, doesn't have a mind, doesn't have any consciousness, I presume. Is that correct?
Well, I remember one Tibetan Buddhist teacher that I heard a long time ago. You know, he said that the actual workings of the ways that all of this manifests, the interrelatedness and the patterns that go on over lifetimes. He said it's extremely it's remarkable. I mean, compared to even the most sophisticated computer, that's like nothing compared to how all this plays out.
Sure. What I was asking is, is karma conscious?
Right. No, that's where I was going.
Okay.
The totality, the field of consciousness or life, whatever you want to call it, existence, being. There's intelligence at work. It's not random. It's following laws which are part and parcel of its nature. Now, I guess, I mean, I don't have a problem calling that God. The only thing that I start to lose it, where it starts getting a little out there for me, is, again, going back to the anthropomorphic conceptualization, where it's understood as like a father in heaven who is watching every single thing that's going on, and who in a very personal way.
But apparently karma is watching that closely. I mean, what I don't understand, Michael, is that the very thing you seem to object to in the theistic view of God is the behavior of that God that most resembles the behavior of karma. And yet you said you don't even have a problem thinking of karma as being maybe God.
So that's one. I mean, it's a term. It's a word for a reality that is so amazingly vast and mysterious it's only a symbol.
Yeah, but
a word.
Michael, we've had many conversations. I've never understood where you're getting caught here, because I mean, you are attracted to a lot of the same concepts. Of course, Buddhism has a lot of very similar concepts to Christianity.
Yeah.
But you always say, but it's this idea of a personal God that you have such a problem with. I think, okay, I can see that might be something that you wouldn't think is self-evident. But I mean, karma is doing the job in your religion that God does.
Yes, yes.
In theistic religions. And yet karma does so, presumably, without any personality, without any personhood, without anything we could explain that would tell us why karma even is on the job at all. Who invented karma? Where did karma come from?
The cosmic intelligence. And I know, you know, you or most other Christians would just say, well, that's the mind of God at work.
And why shouldn't we?
That's a totally fair conclusion. I just don't see it in the have you ever read Meister Eckhart?
No, I know many Christians who have read Meister Eckhart. I've not.
That sounds more, or the Kabbalah. That sounds more. But like the field, I hate, it's such a overused term, but the matrix.
Okay.
If you know what I mean? The field of relations.
Well, Michael, I we've been talking a long time. I only have a few minutes, and there's another call I want to get on here.
Sure, Steve.
But I'm sure this conversation will be continued.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. All right.
It's good to bandy these ideas back and forth with you.
Yes. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. Okay, let's talk to Pure Heart, calling from Aptos, California. Welcome to The Road to Find Out, Pure Heart. Welcome.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I always enjoy your show. It's really neat.
Good.
You sound like you're very well informed about the Bible and whatnot. I've always wondered if there's some place in the Bible that says that updates are not allowed. This is kind of a sophomoric question, but why doesn't God just write in fire in the sky once in a while saying, "Hi, folks, I'm here. Remember to do the right thing." Is there a place in the Bible that says they can't do that?
Well, God has done some of that kind of thing from time to time. But it, the Bible indicates that that's not what God would normally want to do, because he's looking for people who will believe without compulsion.
Wouldn't it nice to have an update to 2,000-year-old English constructions, though? Is there places that you can't do that either? Or?
You mean an update of the biblical language?
Yeah, because I know they added the chapter and verse in the 1500s, and you know, some things are put in, some things left out.
Oh, well, there's been many updates, actually. You know, if you're reading the old King James Version, that was translated in 1611. That language definitely can stand to be updated, but it has been. There's probably at least a dozen modern translations.
But is there a spot anywhere where it says, I'm done now and this is it? Or is that just sort of...
Done doing what?
Updating the Bible.
Oh, you mean adding new books to
the Bible? Or just changing it to reflect modern occurrences and language, et cetera. Or writing in the sky saying, hi there. Do the right thing. I'm here.
Well, that's a different kind of thing than updating the Bible, I think. Actually, well, first of all, the wording of the Bible doesn't necessarily have to be changed because it's relatively clear in a modern translation. If a person doesn't like the 1611 English of the King James Version, they can get a modern translation. It's quite intelligible. As far as God adding more books to the Bible, I don't think that, you know, what the Bible indicates is that God has given us in that all that we need to know how to live to please him. And the highest and final, chief revelation of God is said to be Jesus himself. When, you know, Jesus has come and has made God known to us, and we have the record of his life there in the New Testament and his teachings. And I think what the Bible would teach is that that can never be improved upon. Frankly, you know, it wouldn't make any sense for God to add more since nobody's living by what he's given so far. You know,
right.
Once we're doing everything Jesus said we should be doing, that might be a good time for God to give us some more. But I don't think there's many people trying very hard even to do what he's already said.
That's a good point. I've never heard that before. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Hey, Pureheart, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Call again sometime.
Bye.
Bye now. All right. Well, you've been listening to the Road to Find Out radio broadcast. We're on every Sunday night from 7 to 8. And we open up the phones to talk to people about their belief systems. As I mentioned, I myself have Christian beliefs. I believe in the Bible. I believe in Jesus Christ. My name is Steve Gregg, by the way. And you can find out more about me and what I believe and what I do on a regular basis from my website, which is thenarrowpath.com. I host 10 radio shows a week called The Narrow Path, one in the morning of every weekday, one in the afternoon of every weekday. All of them can be heard from my website, live or later, thenarrowpath.com. Also, I hold meetings on Thursday nights occasionally here in the Santa Cruz area. There will be one this Thursday night. Information is also at the website, thenarrowpath.com. Hope you'll tune in again next week and every week that you can, and call in so we can talk to you sometime. I'm Steve Gregg. Thanks for joining us.